Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Lilydale Radio, featuring topics about spiritualism, mediumship, healing, spirituality, and the Lilydale Assembly, the world's largest center for the religion, philosophy, and science of spiritualism. This is Lilydale Radio.
Welcome to Wednesdays with Willa. I am your host, Willa White, and this is my weekly podcast show that airs on Wednesday mornings at 10 a.m. Eastern on my Facebook page, Willa White Medium. Also goes out on my YouTube channel, which you can find, as well as the Lilydale Assembly Facebook page. And for those who want the audio-only version, you can check it out on blogtalkradio.com/Lilydale. So you'll be able to listen to all the other shows. It's like a symposium of shows throughout the week of different hosts and different topics. And my show focuses on spiritualism, mediumship, healing, faith, family, or more. And today my special guest is Dr. Neil Zupkowski. Hello, Neil.
Hello, Willa, and the rest of you.
It's great to have you back on the show. Neil's been on the show before, so I encourage you to take a look at the archive videos of the show. If you type in on Willa White Medium on Facebook, you'll be able to find prior shows and watch to your heart's content. And it's wonderful to have various folks on the show. I usually try to choose people who can have a wonderful spiritual discussion, which Neil's definitely geared up for. And he's programmed for it, folks, so we're in good hands. And those of you who don't know who Dr. Neil Zupkowski is, he is a medical physician, a retiring medium, and an ordained minister. And today he's going to share with us energetic insights about Easter. You know, Easter holiday is coming up, but tomorrow marks the date of Holy Thursday, and there's a whole lot of energy that builds at this particular time as people celebrate it or at least contemplate the connections with Christ consciousness at this time. So let's take it away, Neil.
All right. Well, thank you very much. Yes, this is La Santa Semana, means the Holy Week, because a lot of things happen this week. It's Holy Thursday or Maundy Thursday, people call it, is commemorating the teachings of Jesus and the culmination of his life's work in that incarnation on this earth plane. And then it was followed by Friday, which is honoring his crucifixion, passion and crucifixion, and all the bad things that happened to him that he endured. Saturday is it's a day of rest in a way. It's the Sabbath for the Jewish folks, and it was the day that Jesus rested without doing anything in the tomb where he was laid after he died. And then, of course, Easter Sunday, he came up and fulfilled the prophecies that were written about him and rose in a spiritual in a way, a materialization of his physical body, in a way. So we as spiritualists know about materialization, where the spirits can take on physical substance and appear solid and real, which is what Jesus did. And he, of course, knew all the spiritual laws to do that. So that's kind of a summary. Of course, Holy Week begins with what's called Palm Sunday, and that's where he enters into Jerusalem after having tried to keep a low profile. He knew his time was up and his mission was going to be fulfilled. So he rode into Jerusalem, which, again, there's a lot of symbolisms in Easter. Jerusalem is symbolic of where of a holy city, and that holy city is symbolic of our holy consciousness, ourselves, and to accept the enlightenment that our consciousness has is symbolic of Jesus going into the Jerusalem. And whenever there's acceptance of spiritual enlightenment and spiritual truth and we realize something, we have guardian angels and guides who, once we've gone through it, because it takes trial and tribulation to realize spiritual truth sometimes. So when we finally enter into that consciousness and say, I have arrived, the guardian angel folds his arms and said, oh, yeah, watch this. And then there's passion and death and trials, just like Jesus went through. So it's very symbolic. But I want to start off, and you can ask questions about this, and I'll get to Holy Thursday, but being blonde and having all the dumb blonde jokes in my life, I have to share this Easter dumb blonde joke. So it's, I'm going to slightly change it from the original, but on Easter week, this Holy Week, just about this time, three friends went to heaven, and of course, St. Peter is the gatekeeper at the gate, and there was a blonde, a brunette, and a redhead, and they all went to heaven at the same time. And Peter looks at them, you know, and he's heard all the dumb blonde jokes, so he says, wow, he says, being Easter week, he says, you know, you need a little bit of intelligence to enter heaven, even though you're on the list. So I'll just ask you a simple question. So he looks at the redhead. He says, tell me about Easter. And she says, oh, Easter. She says, well, we have fireworks and parades and picnics, and it's a great celebration. And he goes, I think she's describing 4th of July. So he looks at the brunette. He says, well, tell me about Easter. And she says, oh, Easter, we have an evergreen that we decorate and we exchange gifts, and it's a big celebration. Goes, oh, my God. So he says, well, the blonde. So he looks at the blonde. He says, all right, tell me about Easter. She says, well, she says, Easter, on Good Friday, they took Jesus and they crucified him. And and before the Sabbath, which was a day of rest, they had to find a quick cave or tomb to put him in. So they put him in this cave, and they rolled a big stone over this cave. And on Saturday, it was all quiet. But Easter is when the sun came up, the stone rolled away, Jesus came out in the sunlight, saw his shadow, ran back in, and that's why we have winter for another 6 weeks. So there you go.
There's so much confusion.
Exactly. And here you thought she was going to say. Anyway, so every time, actually after hearing that joke, every time Easter Sunday comes around and the sun shines, I think, oh, Jesus is going to run back in the hole. He's going to have more snow. So you never know.
Which is all too possible in Western New York.
Absolutely. And I used to say when I was a kid, it used to rain on Christmas, which disappointed all of us kids, but then it used to snow on Easter. So I used to have a saying, green Christmas, white Easter. So, you know, and we just had snow a few days ago. It's hard to believe, but yeah. And now it's supposed to be 70 today.
Yeah, we're going to be living in the sunshine today.
Yeah. So anyway, it's very interesting if you read the Gospels, and I've read them several times. Of course, there's four main Gospels that are in the Bible, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, in that order. That Gospel of Matthew being first one. Mark is the shortest Gospel, so if you want to read an entire Gospel in a sitting, read Mark. Then there's Luke. Luke was a physician, actually, just like myself. So his is probably the most detailed as far as physicians go. And then there was John, and John was one of the disciples of Jesus. So was Matthew, by the way. Matthew was a tax collector. So Matthew and John were two of his close apostles or disciples. Mark kind of took his cue from Matthew, and it's kind of a summary of Matthew's gospel. Luke was also a follower, but really was not one of the 12 apostles. John actually was one of the 12 apostles, and he is known as John the Beloved because he was probably the closest to Jesus as far as emotional ties go and doing things with Jesus. So John had extra insight into Jesus and the way he thought and what he did. Very interesting, though, and we all think of the Last Supper, the Eucharist, the communion, the breaking of bread. We all think of that because, in fact, that's what Holy Communion is in many of the Christian churches, where Jesus took bread and wine and offered them as symbols of what he was going through and symbols of the spiritual truth behind what he was doing. It's very interesting because a lot of spiritual things are very difficult to put into words in the English language or in any language for that matter, although Sanskrit has some words and concepts which are hard to understand by the Western minds. But there are things beyond the physical, beyond explanation, and the only way to really get at their presence or their meaning is to do symbols. So symbols, bread, wine, those are symbols of a spiritual meaning that are more than just bread and wine. As I mentioned before, even the entry into Jerusalem. Jerusalem is the holy city, and we have on the top of our heads, the head city, in other words, our consciousness, the entry of the Christ, or the realization that we are connected with the one spiritual power. That's the entry into Jerusalem. That's one level. They say that when you dream or when you read the Bible, there are seven levels of meaning at least. And one level is a surface level, but there are levels of spiritual truth beyond that. And I'm sharing that one level of Jesus' entry into Jerusalem as an example. Anyway, getting to the Gospels, it's very interesting if you read them. Matthew, Mark, and Luke all describe the breaking of the bread and the wine and things like that. But if you read in the Gospel of John, he doesn't mention it. So it's like, what? And the other thing that is interesting is, and the reason you invited me here, you remember we do a ceremony in our church, or did, where we reenact the washing of the feet, mm-hmm. which is also symbolic, and I'm going to get into that on one of the things that happened on Thursday. Now, the washing of the feet is gone into in detail in the Gospel of John, but it is not in Matthew, Mark, and Luke. So Matthew, Mark, and Luke talk about bread and wine, and John talks about feet. So go figure. And it's very interesting how each gospel has a particular emphasis on what they want to teach. So then there's kind of a summary of all that. Let me grab this. This is a book which is very interesting called The Aquarian Gospel of Jesus the Christ, and it was written around 100 years ago by a man called Eliphas Levi. And Levi was an intuitive, psychic, medium, you want to call it, and he was able to read what we call the Akashic Records, which I'm sure you've addressed on some of your shows. It is a record of everything that was, is, and will be, because it's all universal is now, a universal presence. Anyway, so Eliphas Levi tuned into the Akashic Records of the time of Jesus, and he wrote the Aquarian Gospel of Jesus the Christ. It's more in-depth than any of the four Gospels, that it includes Jesus' life as he grew up. So it's very interesting in that account. It also sort of explains a little more the symbolism of Jesus and what he was trying to accomplish. Interestingly enough, it's written in, I think, iambic pentameter. It's a type of poetry. It doesn't rhyme. The verses don't rhyme, but there's a rhythm to it that is more like poetry. So it's very interesting writing. And he basically summarizes Holy Week, the happenings of Holy Week, including the happenings of what we call Maundy Thursday or Holy Thursday. And he includes both the breaking of the bread and the washing of the feet. So so we can review some of that.
Good.
We, in the spiritualist church where I was ordained initially, which was called Trinity Temple of the Holy Spirit in Albany, New York, when I was going to college and medical school. Actually, I got ordained in June of 1978, which was 1 month after I got my MD from Syracuse Medical College, which was in May of 1978. So I was MD'd in May and then ordained in June. Of course, everybody knows MD stands for medical deity, which reminds me of another joke. So St. Peter's at the gate letting people in, and the one guy comes up, and St. Peter says, "Yeah, you're on the list to get into heaven, but it's lunchtime, and let's go to lunch first before I show you your room." So they're going to the cafeteria, and there is a long line in the cafeteria, so they're waiting in line, and all of a sudden, this guy in a white coat and a stethoscope barges through the line, gets in there first, gets his food, And the newcomer says to St. Peter, "Who is that?" And St. Peter says, "Shh, that's God. He thinks he's a doctor." So anyway, so I got my MD, and then I got ordained, and that was in 78. What we used to do in that church, I became assistant pastor of the church once I was ordained. We used to, every Easter week on Thursday, we would have a special service, and it was a potluck. So what we would do is people would bring a dish to pass, and we'd all sit down remembering the Last Supper. We would pray, and we would reflect on the events of the day. And during that time, we would have the minister reenact the washing of the feet. And in the Catholic Church, actually, when a priest is ordained as a priest, they also undergo, part of the sacrament is washing of the feet. So they have reenacted that where Jesus does this. They reenact that even in the Catholic Church. So I just, I have this book, and I just thought I would read about the washing of the feet and some of the symbolism of it. And of course, you know, the 12 apostles, the head of the 12 apostles was named Peter. And he was, Peter also means Petrus, petrified. These names come from Peter. Being petrified means being hard or turned into stone. Pierre in French means Peter, but it also means stone. So the meaning of Peter is stone. He was, of course, when Jesus first met him, he was called Simon. And Simon got the name from Jesus, Peter, meaning stone or rock. And Jesus told Simon, "Upon this stone, upon this foundation, I will build my church. I will build things." But there's a double meaning to that, because Peter was the most hard-headed guy. You know, he just knew what was right. And of course, you know people who are hard-headed in this life as well, or they just don't get it. And so he was a little hard-headed and stubborn, and that was Peter. So it's interesting, Peter's reaction during the washing of feet. Let's see. Let me find it here. On Thursday morning, Jesus called to him the 12 disciples, and I'll go through the events. So tomorrow is Thursday. Today is Wednesday, the day of preparation. So let's think about how Jesus arranged this for Thursday. So on Thursday morning, so tomorrow morning, think about this. Jesus called his 12 disciples and said, "This is God's remembrance day, and we will eat the Paschal Supper all alone." So there's a meaning in that, too. The events were foreshadowed many thousands of years earlier by the events of the Passover, which is where the people of Israel, of the original Jewish family, which had grown and multiplied in Egypt, was kept captive in Egypt by the Pharaoh. And Moses wanted to liberate those people and go to the promised land. So he asked the Pharaoh to let his people go, and the Pharaoh said no. So Moses said, "Well, I'm connected with God. We got a line here, and if you don't do what we ask, God's going to punish you or make it hard on you." And so Moses sent various plagues to Egypt and the Pharaoh watched his people suffer and then finally gave in. And then just as he gave in, he would change his mind. And this happened again and again. And so finally, the last plague that went was to kill the firstborn of the families, and it was going to be throughout all of Egypt. The firstborn sons were going to basically be found dead that morning. But in order to avoid that for the Jewish people, Moses prescribed a special meal, and they sacrificed a lamb, and the blood was sprinkled on the lintels and the doorstep so that the angel of death would see that, would see the preparation made, and pass over them. So that was called Passover. But they were also told that, just like the other plagues, Pharaoh would change his mind really quick. So you better, this time, get going. As soon as that morning comes, get ready and flee. So that night, which would be tonight, commemorating it, would be the night that the angel of death visited the Egyptians and took their firstborns. With the Jewish, they passed over those houses, and in the morning, the Jewish then picked up everything and left before the Pharaoh changed his mind. And, of course, you know, the Pharaoh did change his mind finally and sent his army after the Jewish people, and Moses, when they reached the Red Sea, stretched out his hand, the waters parted, they got through the passage, whereas the Pharaoh's army, by the time they got in hot pursuit, the waters came back, and basically the Jews were able to escape. So that was what happened many, many, many years before this. But it's a precursor to the Jesus basically being sacrificed again. He was the firstborn of Mary, and it was kind of a symbol of that. So, and it was also a fulfillment of a promise, and that is that we humans, in our humanness, that's overlooked, that's passed over for the realization of the Christ consciousness or the spiritual consciousness coming into our awareness that we are more than our physical body. And so to explain all that in physical terms is very difficult. So you use symbols again with all of these symbols happening. So anyway, so let me go back to the gospel as I talk about it. So on Thursday morning, Jesus called his 12 disciples and said, "This is God's remembrance day, and we will eat the Passover supper all alone." And then he said to Peter, James, and John, which basically Peter stands for faith, James for strength, and John for love, or faith, hope, and charity, if you want to call it. But those are some. Each disciple has a particular trait that they are symbolic of. But he said, "Go into Jerusalem and there prepare for the meal." And the disciples said, "Well, where would you like us to go and have the feast prepared?" And Jesus said, "Go by the fountain gate, and you will see a man who has a pitcher in his hand. Speak to him and say, 'This is the first day of unleavened bread. The Lord would have you set apart your banquet hall where he may eat his last Passover with the 12. Fear not, for the man whom you see is Nicodemus, a ruler of the Jews, and yet a man of God." So Jesus, of course, was a medium and a clairvoyant, and he saw what needed to be done, and he knew it would be arranged, and he knew Nicodemus was a friend of his, actually, and knew him, and so he would, of course, be glad to help Jesus out in whatever was needed. And so Jesus told his disciples to go to where he was at. Now, when Jesus died and the Christians began the Christianity movement, one of the signs that they were Christians, and they had to do this in secret a lot, was to draw a fish. And Jesus was basically the spiritual teacher of the age of Pisces, which is the age of the fish. We are now, and you've heard this probably a lot, we are entering into the age of Aquarius. So it's very interesting that Jesus told his disciples to go by the fountain gate, and there you will see a man who has a pitcher in his hand. So there is a foretaste of the age of Aquarius after Jesus' teachings were fulfilled during the Piscean age. Ichthus is the Greek name. Ichthus is the Greek name for fish. And actually, if you look at the Greek letters and know the Greek words, Ichthus means Jesus Christ, Son of God. The abbreviations for it turn out to be Ichthus. So that's why the fish was one of the signs of Christians. Again, symbols, little ditties that people sometimes don't realize. So anyway, the water bearer, the pitcher, who then begins the feast, is kind of a forerunner of the age of Aquarius, which we are going into now. And so some of these, that which is hidden is becoming revealed. That was a prophecy you can see in the Bible, that which is hidden will become revealed. Well, that symbolically is taking place now, and literally as well, because there are cameras all over the place. Look at, we're on Zoom. It's very hard to hide things these days. You know, bank robbers, they got to be careful with the cameras, and, you know, that which is hidden is now becoming revealed. You know, it's just amazing. You can't go anywhere. Of course, they're following you with your phone, et cetera. But just because you're paranoid does not mean somebody isn't out to get you. So just remember that. Anyway, in Thursday morning, the preparations for the banquet began. And the disciples went and found, just as Jesus predicted, there was a man with a pitcher, and they asked him about getting his banquet hall. He had an upper room and a banquet hall. Now, of course, the upper room in a hall stands for higher consciousness. Things go on in our upper room, our higher consciousness. So Jesus was preparing our higher consciousness for some of his teachings. Now, when the hour had come to eat the feast, the 12 began to argue among themselves, each anxious to secure the honored seat. Of course, I want to be in such a seat, you know, I deserve this, etc. And Jesus said, but friends, would you argue just before these important things are going to happen? There is no honored seat at heaven's feast except for him who humbly takes the lowest seat. So you've probably heard the first shall be last and the last shall be first. This is where that idea comes from. You know, humble yourself. This is where the real meat of spirituality comes in. And so after he said to them, there's no honored seat except at heaven's feast except for him who takes the lowest seat, Jesus then arose and took a basin of water and a towel, and bowing down, he washed the feet of all 12 and dried them with the towel. And he breathed upon them. Breath is symbolic of life. As a matter of fact, in the Lakota tradition, ni, which is the symbol of breath, is also ni, the symbol of life. So breath, life, this Jesus breathed upon them, giving them spiritual life in the upper room of consciousness. He breathed upon them and said, may these feet walk in the ways of righteousness forever. Now, there's a symbology in the feet, which is explained later as this reading continues. It goes, then he came to Peter, the rock, and he was about to wash his feet, and Peter said, Lord, you don't need to bow down and wash my feet. And Jesus said, you don't understand the meaning, the symbolic meaning of the thing I do, but you will eventually. Hardhead that you are. And Peter said, my master, no, you shall not stoop down and wash my feet. And Jesus said, my friend, if I don't wash your feet, you'll have no part of me. And then Peter said, well, then I care about you. I want a part of you. Don't not only wash my feet, here's my whole, wash my whole self, you know, let's do it. And so he still wasn't understanding. So Jesus explained, said to him, he who has taken his first bath is clean and has no need to wash except his feet. The feet truly are symbols of understanding. What do you stand on? Your feet. Understanding. Get it? So in English, true. But we, you know, and we use feet, the symbol of understanding. It's what we stand upon. It's our grounding. It's our basis. We sometimes use this expression, you need to ground yourself. You need to have both feet on the ground. So symbolically, Jesus was helping the disciples symbolically understand all the things that were going on here. So he said, feet truly are symbols of understanding of man, and he who would be clean must in the living stream of life wash well his understanding every day. So every day we can get carried along by fake news or opinions of others, but really in the end we have to go into our higher consciousness every day, wash our understanding, say, what is for me the truth? What is the spiritual guidance that I am taking this day and every day? So not only on Sunday do we need to look at our spirituality, our understanding, our guidance, but every day we need to look within ourselves rather than outside of ourselves. So Jesus was explaining that to his disciples on that day. And then Jesus further explained, he said, "You call me master, and such I am. If then your Lord and master kneels and washes your feet, should you not wash each other's feet and thus show forth your willingness to serve?" And this is an echo of when he was saying to his disciples, "What are you arguing for? The least shall have the honored seats in heaven." And he said, "Now that you know these things, if you do them and follow through, thrice blessed are you." In other words, good for you. You know, now you got it. And then he said, "This is an hour I can truly praise God, for I've greatly wished to eat with you this feast before I pass from this earthly plane." So he was basically predicting his death. And of course, he says, you know, "One of you will betray me." And this is referring to Judas and John the Beloved, who was closer to Jesus than anybody figured. Oh, if anybody can figure out who is going to betray him, I can figure it out. So John leaned against Jesus and he said, who are you talking about? And Jesus said, "It's the guy that I'm going to give a piece of bread to." So he dipped his hand in some olive oil to get to his Judas, and he gave Judas the bread, and he said, "Go do what you're supposed to do." Because there was an agreement before all this happened that Judas would do this. Now, interesting, some of the symbolism in that, which I suppose I can get into. Do you have any comments or things that have been going on?
I was going to ask, because I know that there was something about Judas didn't have his feet washed, I think, too. Is that right?
That's right.
He didn't go through the foot washing.
No. Some people say he did. Some people say he didn't.
Yeah.
It's unclear. In some of the Gospels with the breaking of the bread, Judas had already left.
Right.
All right?
And there then other stories, there's Jesus kissed him.
No, actually, Judas kissed Jesus.
Well, yeah, Judas kissed Jesus. That's what I'm saying. It's like later on, but there's a sense of connection that way.
Right. Yes, there is. What happened, let's get into that for a moment, because that's very interesting. So there is another gospel. Basically, the four gospels, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, were chosen as the main gospels on purpose by the church fathers at the Council, I believe, of Nicaea, about 218 years or 19 years after Jesus died. So 200 years later, there were a lot of gospels, a lot of stories of Jesus floating around, but the Council chose those four as the main ones to be in the Bible, in the New Testament. There were other gospels, for instance, the Gospel of Mary Magdalene. There's a story about Jesus that was supposedly written with Mary Magdalene. There was one written by Judas Didymus Thomas, otherwise called Doubting Thomas. Some of you have heard, God bless you, Doubting Thomas. And his name was actually Judas Didymus Thomas. And he was the one that didn't believe Jesus rose, and he said, you know, "Show me the feet, and I'll believe it when I see it," kind of a thing. So that was Doubting Thomas. But Judas Didymus Thomas, Didymus means twin, and Jesus and he looked so much alike that they called Thomas the twin, because he looked almost like Jesus. So when the agreement was that Judas would deliver Jesus over to the army there, to the Sanhedrin, he knew Jesus liked to meditate in the garden, and there's a beautiful song, "I Come to the Garden Alone," which kind of reminds you of that. So he knew that Jesus would be in the garden with his disciples after the, you know, meditating and thinking after the Last Supper. So because it was Jesus that they were after and they wanted to spare everybody else, they had to figure out who in the dark at night was Jesus. And because Thomas looked so much like Jesus, they didn't want to mistake him. So Judas said, "I know the difference. I will kiss Jesus as a sign that that's the one you want."
Right.
So there's where the kiss now, and that's why it was needed, because they didn't want to get the wrong person.
The body double.
The body double, the twin, yeah.
Wow.
And at night, And don't forget, they didn't have flashlights back then. So they had to figure out in the moonlight, you know, who was who. So this is why the kiss was needed, to figure out it was Jesus. Because otherwise, you know, and then, of course, Jesus said to him, "Which you betray your master with a kiss." It was like, oh, my God, you know, I can't believe it. You know, pour salt in the wound, you know, already. So it was a sad thing, but that's why the kiss was needed, because they wanted to get the right man, and they didn't want to make a mistake and get Thomas instead. Anyway, so that's the story of Judas and the kiss.
Yeah.
And, of course, Judas became so guilty that after that he hung himself.
Yeah.
There was no forgiveness, but Jesus forgives all. And, indeed, in the spiritual realm, we know that all is love and light, which is hard to believe down here. But as you pass into spirit, you know that it's all life. And speaking of that, Jesus shared the spiritual life truth by breaking bread as a symbol of the substance, solid substance of spirituality down here on earth. He broke the bread, breaking it, symbolic of his sacrificing his earthly self in favor of his spiritual self, and wine. Now, let's get into that symbolism
a minute. Yeah, this is great, Neil. This is wonderful.
Okay. So how are we doing for time? I guess we're okay.
We're doing great, too. Yep.
Okay. Let's get into that betrayal for a minute. So he said, as they sang a song of praise that Jews were wont to sing before the feast. In other words, they said grace, and they said a hymn before they ate. And then as they were eating, the master said, "I am greatly troubled, because I know one of you will turn away and betray me into wicked hands." And the disciples were amazed, and they said, they looked into each other's face in wonderment. They said, Is it I? How can I do such a thing? But they knew that Jesus, whatever he said, usually came true, like the man with the picture at the gate. So what Jesus said was true. So they said, "What? How can that be?" I mean, and Peter said to John, "Well, who's he talking to?" And this is where John, asked Jesus, "Hey, who are you talking about?" And Jesus, John put forth his hand and touched the master's hand and said, "Which one of us is so depraved as to betray his Lord?" And Judas said, "Is it I?" And Jesus said, "He is the one who now has put his hand with mine into the dish." And they looked, and Judas's hand was in with the hand of Jesus in the dish dipping bread. In another gospel, that he handed the bread to Judas. Whatever it was, there was a commonality in sharing of the bread, in sharing of the substance. But sometimes we get distracted by substance and forget the meaning of that. Mm-hmm. So all of this symbolism. And Jesus said, "The prophets cannot fail. The Son of Man must be betrayed, but it's too bad that somebody had to do it. You know, woe to him who betrays me." From the table, Judas rose at once, for his hour had come. And Jesus said to him, "Do quickly what you are to do." In other words, Jesus knew this, and Judas knew this was his job. He didn't want to do it, by the way. He just didn't want to do it, but he realized that that was his duty for the master in this lifetime. Now, when the path was done and the 11 sat in silent thought, Jesus took a loaf of bread which had not been broken and said, "This loaf is symbol of my body, and the bread is the symbol of the bread of life, spiritual life. And as I break this loaf, so shall my flesh be broken as a pattern for the sons of man. For men must freely give up their bodies in willing sacrifice for other men." This is a symbology again. The master washes the feet. We are on this earth plane not only for ourselves and our ego, our flesh, but we are here to serve other men. And, of course, in those days when that gospel was written, it's other people, men and women. So when we use men, we refer to men and women, the human race. So humans must freely give of their bodies in willing sacrifice for other humans, to be PC, critically correct in this day and age. It's very interesting. I came, and this was yesterday that I saw this. There is a prayer which was written by, which was channeled by Helen Blavatsky and put out, and it's the prayer of from the light of God, may light stream forth to the hearts of men, may light take over on earth. It's the great invocation is what it's called. Anyway, and the original written in 1945 said, may light stream forth to the hearts of men. And they modified it into this new, may light stream forth into the hearts of humankind. So man is now being replaced. And you know, it's interesting how language evolves over time. And so even the language of Jesus, back then certain things had certain meanings which we now have maybe forgotten. So, but bread still carries, the bread of life still has that meaning. So as I break this loaf, so shall my flesh be broken as a pattern for the sons of humanity. For humans must freely give up their bodies in willing sacrifice for each other. And as you eat this bread, so shall you eat the bread of life and never die. And he gave each one a piece of bread to eat. So it's the universal isness giving of themselves to all. And if Judas was there, he would have gotten a piece of bread too, because God doesn't judge. When it rains, it doesn't rain only on good people. It rains on everybody without judgment. When the sun shines, it doesn't shine on only bad people. It shines on everybody. So it's non-judgment is being taught here. Then he took a cup of wine, and he said, blood is life. And this wine symbolizes the life blood of the grape. It is the symbol of the life who gives his life for fellow humankind. And as you drink this wine, if you drink it in faith, you drink the life of the Christ consciousness. So I am offering you the teachings, the spiritual values that I teach. This is symbolically bringing it down to earth, things that you can understand. And then he passed the cup and his disciples supped, and Jesus said, this is the feast of life. In other words, this is symbolically the feast of spiritual life, the supper of the Lord. And you shall often eat the bread and drink the wine in remembrance of my teachings. Mm-hmm. So this is the story of Holy Thursday, or of the breaking of the bread, of the teachings of Jesus. And it's very interesting. The symbolism of this, it's interesting if you read Unity School of Christianity, which is some of you have probably even read the Daily Word, which is a little prayer that comes out every day from Unity School of Christianity. They published a book called the Metaphysical Bible Dictionary, and this was published by Unity School of Christianity. And it also, and this is before even the Aquarian Gospel was in the process of being written, but the symbols here, it gives you, if you look up wine, it tells you it's a symbol of life. If you look up bread, it tells you about that. So it's got not only, it's mainly names of places and people, but it's also got in the metaphysical or symbolic meaning of many of the things that are mentioned in the Bible, bread and wine and other things that we talk about. So that's basically what happened at the Last Supper. And of course, after they had the supper, they went to the Garden of Gethsemane, where Jesus had his final prayers, and all the disciples were there, but he wanted a special place. So he took Peter, James, and John a little bit further than everybody else, because those were the special three. Those were the ones that, if you remember in the Gospels, there's a Feast of the Transfiguration where Jesus was taken up to the mountain, and he only brought three of his disciples, Peter, James, and John, the three buddies there, up to the mountain. And there Jesus, they had a vision of Jesus next to Moses and Elijah, mm-hmm. which was a demonstration of the eternalness of life, because Moses and Elijah supposedly were dead, but in fact lived on in spirit and materialized. It was a materialization seance, actually,
yeah.
Because there was a tent there, just like we call the cabinet, the seance cabinet. So it was a tent, and the three bodies materialized, and they spoke with each other, and the disciples saw that, and they said, well, you know, what shall we do? And it was a teaching for Peter, James, and John, strength, faith, and love. to strengthen the faith and love in spiritual things. So it was an experience. And so they were brought further into the garden, and Jesus said, you know, stay with me as I pray. And, of course, they fell asleep. And it was just like Jesus was praying, and it's like his final word, one of the final words on the cross is, you know, when it all is said and done, we can't blame anyone else for the conditions that we have around us or what happens to us or what the final is. It's all up to us alone. Mm-hmm. So in the words of Jesus on the cross, he said, my God, why hast thou abandoned me? The disciples fell asleep and abandoned him. Mm-hmm. So it was all by himself. And it was, you know, even though we have the support of angels all around us, we individually create our own reality. And that is something that we talk about as well on certain levels. So this is also symbolic of what is going on in spiritual, in each of our own spiritual paths, really. We come across where we feel abandoned. And sometimes it is in the hour of greatest need where we realize that it is our spirit that we need to connect with to bring us through. It's the old story about the footprints in the sand. And, you know, there were two sets of footprints and you were walking beside me, but then, you know, there was only one set of footprints. You abandoned me. No, he said, I was carrying you. So this is kind of a insight that comes up with the stories of Holy Week, actually, which reminds me actually of a little story about a Buddhist monk, two Buddhist monks. Very, very, it's not really a joke, but it's a very insightful little parable. The monks had vows of you know, being celibate and not looking at earth, you know, earth and the things of earth that drew their consciousness down. So two monks were on a journey to a temple. And on this journey, there was a younger monk and an older monk. And on the journey, they had to cross a stream, which was kind of deep and running fast. And there was a beautiful blonde woman, blonde, of course, beautiful blonde woman there. And she said, you know, I am so frail, you know, and thin, I really would be swept away by the stream. Would one of you please carry me over there? So the older monk said, sure, hop on my back. And he carried her over the stream, let her off on the other side, and they continued their journey. Well, a couple hours later on the path, the young monk finally couldn't hold himself in anymore. He said, you know, he said, we took vows of celibacy and not paying attention to things of the earth. And that shapely woman there, you took her on your back and crossed the river with her. And the older monk looked at the younger monk and said, well, yeah, I did, and I left her over there on the other bank, but 2 hours later, you're still carrying her. So what do we carry?
Yeah.
Oh, and of course, then there's Peter. When Jesus was talking about betraying, Peter said, I will never betray you. And Jesus said, don't be so sure. Before the cock crows in the next morning, you will betray me, not only once, but three times. And in fact, when in the garden, the disciples woke up as the army came to take Jesus. And when they did, Judas kissed Jesus, so they got the right guy, and the rest of the disciples ran off, including Peter. And Peter and John, though, because John, again, really was the closest to Jesus, they sort of didn't run off totally. They hung around. And during the night, they were in the watchmen's camp where Jesus was being tried by the Pharisees. And Peter was warming his hands by the fire. And some of the guards looked at him and said, we recognize you. Didn't you, weren't you one of Jesus' followers? He says, I don't know who you're talking about. And they said it again. Well, surely you must be somebody. You're so familiar. No, I don't know the man. And by the third time, somebody also came up to him and said, you're one of his disciples who's being tried in there, aren't you? And he said, absolutely not. And he swore, gosh darn it, I wish you wouldn't ask me. I don't even know this guy. And then the cock crowed just at that moment. And Peter said, oh, my God, three times. And he cried and he flew. He deserted him. He couldn't handle it. In the meantime, John hung on there. And John followed through with Jesus. The next day, Jesus was whipped on a pillar with whips. He had a crown of thorns digging into his head. John stayed through all that. Peter had gone, flew the coop, so to speak, flew the coop as the cock crowed. Now, you know, there's a symbolism in that. But anyway, so John hung in there. And at the foot of the cross, when Jesus was nailed to that cross, John hung in there. And so did the women. Now, interestingly, all those bigwigs, the disciple, Jesus, Peter the rock, wasn't around. You know, but John the beloved stood there, and the women as well. And they were at the foot of the cross. And Jesus looked down and said, "Woman, behold your son. Son, behold your mother." In other words, take care of my mother. So let's look at the light side of things for a moment. Okay? So it shows the power of women who are supportive of their men. Mary and the three Marys actually at the bottom of the cross. There was Salome and Mary, the mother of Jesus, and Mary Magdalene was there, who was actually a very close consort of Jesus as well. And you can believe what you want, but there were the closeness of Mary Magdalene and Jesus and the closeness of John the Beloved and Jesus. And they were all at the bottom of the cross supporting him. And then Jesus looked down and said that. But to lighten it a moment, I want to tell you about some of the symbolism of the Passover with Moses and Jesus. So Moses and Jesus came down from heaven to play golf. And they were playing golf. And Moses hit the ball across the water hazard, and he had to go find the ball. And rather than go all the way around the water hazard, he looks at Jesus. He says, "Do you still think I have it in me?" And Jesus says, "Go ahead and try." So he puts his hand out, water hazard parts. They walk across, get the ball. So later on, they're golfing again, and Jesus hits his ball across the water hazard, and he says to Moses, he says, "You think I still got it in you?" "Yeah, walk on the water." So Moses says, "Yeah, go ahead." So Jesus starts walking on the water and sinks. And he says, "What happened?" Moses said, "Well, look, your feet, there's holes in them." So anyway, jokes. Then, of course, you know, Moses and Jesus, they're buddy-buddy because, you know, they got together on the Transfiguration Day when they materialized together, you know. So they were down playing golf again, and Jesus was in a sand trap with his ball, you know. I don't know anything about golf, but, you know, he asked Moses to hand him a 5-iron. And Moses said, "You'll never get out of the sand trap with that." And he said, "Well, I've seen Arnold Palmer do it with that, and if he can do it, I can do it." So Jesus hits the ball, and it goes into the water, and it sinks, and Moses is kind of disgusted anyway because he knew he wouldn't use that. It wouldn't work. So it's the well's in the water hazard, and it crosses it, and so Jesus has to walk across the water to get the ball. So Jesus is walking across the water, and one of the other golfers sees this and says, "Oh, my God, that man must think he's Jesus Christ." And Moses looks over and says, "No, Arnold Palmer." Well, another golf joke. Anyway, I digress. So Jesus basically predicted again that Peter would deny him three times, and Peter, hard-headed Peter, said, "Absolutely not, I won't." And three times in the night? No way. And then when he did it, and then he heard the cock crow, he realized what he did. And, of course, the disciples, except for John, who was probably the bravest because he was so connected to Jesus, they hid out after Jesus had been crucified, and they were in the upper room trying to get their consciousness uplifted. And, of course, Jesus on Easter Sunday did, in fact, arise from the tomb, rematerialize. He knew how to transform physical matter using ectoplasm, as we spiritualists call it, and become solid. So the first person he met in the garden that they mistook him, it was Mary Magdalene, who was very close to Jesus and, of course, wanted to see how Jesus was doing. What happened was Jesus was placed in the tomb. The Jewish religion has a very taboo about doing anything on Saturday. So Friday, Jesus died and was taken down from the cross before sundown, which is when they weren't supposed to do anything. And he was hastily put into a borrowed tomb and wrapped in the cloth for his burial. But they didn't have time to put the spices and preserves that they usually do in the bodies because it was the Sabbath. So on Sunday, they came to do this because they could now work on it. And the first one there was Mary Magdalene. And when she got there, she found that the tomb was the stone, heavy stone, was rolled away, and there was an empty tomb. And she saw the wrappings of the body laying there neatly folded. Mm-hmm. And she looked and saw somebody around, and she thought that he was the gardener of the cemetery there. And she said, what have you done with my Lord? And then Jesus said, Mary. And when he said Mary, she instantly recognized who he was. But he said, don't touch me. I have not yet gone to the Father. In other words, I haven't fully materialized yet. And we know from materialization sciences that when you touch the ectoplasmic form without permission, it is difficult. It disintegrates. So it wasn't fully formed yet. So Jesus said, hang on there. Don't touch me. But go tell the disciples who are hiding out, thinking that they're next, tell them that I have risen as predicted. So she ran and she told the disciples, hey, this is really happening. So they were still doubting. Of course, how do you believe anybody can do this? I mean, even now this happened. So they went, but Peter, who is the doubting, you know, was faith said, oh my God, this must happen. So he and John, love, ran to the area to see if this was true. And in fact, it was. They found the wrappings. And in the tomb, there was an angel that they saw there. And an apparition they saw with the folded garments. And the angel said, why are you looking for the dead amongst the living? He is not here. Mm-hmm. So there's a symbolism. And a lot of stuff here happens if you read the Bible. I highly encourage everybody during the next few days to go open at least the Gospel of John, which has many teachings that were taught during the Last Supper, which are very good for our own spiritual insight. The Gospels of Matthew, Mark, and Luke are okay, but they don't have a lot of philosophy or things that we can learn from Holy Week versus the Gospel of John. So read them all if you want, just those final chapters. It's not a hard thing to do, but I highly encourage you to do that. So anyway, so Peter and John ran to the tomb and realized that they didn't see him. They saw the angel, and the angel said, don't look for the dead among the living. So they ran back. And they told all the disciples that up in the upper room. And then Jesus came to the upper room. And by then he had fully solidified and was able to have people touch him. And he came and he actually ate food, which is hard for a spirit to do, but he was able to do it in his materialized body and had shown the disciples that he was really there. Now, it just so happened that the disciple Thomas had been out shopping or getting food because they were stuck in the upper room. So he missed it the first time. So when all the disciples said to Thomas, this is really true. Jesus really rose from the dead. You know, he's really there. Thomas says, I just don't believe it till I can put my fingers in the hand, in the wounds of his feet and his hand in his side because he was struck with a sword to make his head down on Friday. To see that, I don't believe it. So the next time Jesus was there, Thomas was there. Jesus appeared to the disciples and said, Thomas, I heard you not believe. You want to put your hand in my side? Go right ahead. Put your feet in. And Thomas, oh, no, this is good enough. I believe it. And a lot of us, you know, we say the same thing. I don't believe it. But when we finally see it, it's hard to believe, but it really happened. Amazing things at my house happen where, you know, people have materialized in seances in my room. They've even gone through solid walls into my kitchen, and totally unbelievable.